Some of the basic rules you learn in preaching class are to have an engaging hook to get your audience's attention, to stay on point, and to close with a clear takeaway or action for people to apply to their lives. This sermon will break all of those rules. Zenith and I are going to share four total parables. But rather than having one single sermon with a beginning, a middle, and an end with a clear conclusion, because I think clear conclusions have limited this text rather than opened them up, we're going to share some different reflections that are going to hopefully spark your imagination. As we're talking, we're going to pass around some of the different parable-themed objects that we've been collecting this morning to invite our senses into the world of the parables. We'll also invite you to share very briefly with your neighbor, after each reflection, what you've heard or what questions have been sparked for you before Janet leads our sharing time for our whole group. So Zenith, if you want to come on up. Oh, wait, sorry. I think Debbie and Scott first, right?
Reading Matthew 7, 1 through 6. Do not judge so that you may not be judged. For with the judgment you make, you will be judged, and the measure you give will be the measure you get. Why do you see the speck in your neighbor's eye, but you do not notice the log in your own eye? Or how can you say to your neighbor, let me take the speck out of your eye, while the log is in your own eye? You hypocrite, first take the log out of your own eye, and then you will see clearly to take the speck out of your neighbor's eye. Do not give what is holy to dogs, and do not throw your pearls before swine, or they will trample them underfoot and turn and maul you.
Continuing, ask and it will be given to you. Search and you will find. Knock and the door will be opened to you. For everyone who asks receives, and everyone who searches finds. And for everyone who knocks, the door will be opened. Is there anyone among you who, if a child asks for bread, will give a stone? Or if a child asks for a fish, will give a snake? If you then, who are evil, know how to give good gifts to your children, how much more will your Father in heaven give good things to those who ask him? In everything, do to others as you would have them do to you, for this is the law and the prophets.
Enter through the narrow gate, for the gate is wide and the road is easy that leads to destruction, and there are many who take it. For the gate is narrow and the road is hard that leads to life, and there are few who find it.
Beware of false prophets who come to you in sheep's clothing, but inwardly are ravenous wolves. You will know them by their fruits. Are grapes gathered from thorns or figs from thistles? In the same way, every good tree bears good fruit, but the bad tree bears bad fruit. Every tree that does not bear good fruit is cut down and thrown into the fire. Thus you will know them by their fruits. Not everyone who says to me, Lord, Lord, will enter the kingdom of heaven, but only the one who does the will of my Father in heaven. On that day, many will say to me, Lord, Lord, didn't we prophesy in your name and cast out demons in your name and do deeds of power in your name? Then I will declare to them, I never knew you. Go away from me, you evildoers.
Everyone then who hears these words of mine and acts on them will be like a wise man who built his house on rock. The rain fell, the floods came, and the winds blew and beat on that house, but it did not fall because it had been founded on rock. And everyone who hears these words of mine and does not act on them will be like a foolish man who built his house on sand. The rain fell, and the floods came, and the winds blew and beat against that house, and it fell, and great was its fall. Now when Jesus had finished saying these things, the crowds were astounded at his teaching, for he taught them as one having authority and not as their scribes.
Engineer and geologist would read the parables. Do not ridicule so that you may not be ridiculed, for the evaluation you make, you will be evaluated, and the peer review you give will be the peer review you get. Why do you see the sand grain in your neighbor's eye, but do not notice the pebble in your own eye? Or how can you say to your neighbor, let me wash the sand out your eyes, while the gravel was in your own eyes? You hypocrite, first wash the muck off your own face, then you will see clearly to wipe the mud out your neighbor's face. Do not cast what is holy to dogs. Do not toss your gems before pigs, or they will crush them underfoot, turn, and roll you like colored stones in a rock tumbler. Dig, and it will be unearthed. Drill, and you will tap the right vein. Excavate, and the mine will be deep enough. For everyone who digs unearths, and everyone who drills finds. For everyone who excavates, the mine will be worthwhile. Is there anyone among you who, if your child asks for a fossil, will give only the sandstone in which it lay? Or if the child asks for a pretty quartz crystal, will give just shiny glass? If you then, who are evil, know how to give nice rocks to your children, curious about the world, how much more will your Father in heaven give mineral resources to those who ask him? In everything, be professional to others as you would have them be professional to you, for this is the code of conduct and the prophets. Lead your geological expedition through the narrow mountain crevice, for the fracture is wide and easy is the trail that leads to rock falls. There are many who stepping and climbing weakened rock faces, but in the crevice that is narrow, rocky is the trail that leads to life, and there are a few expeditions that take it. Everyone then who follow my recommendations and act on them would be like the wise engineer who listened to his geologist when designing his building. Rainfall came, runoff accumulated, and winds gusted. All this stressed and strained that structure, but it did not fail because it had been anchor bolted to a mass of granite. And everyone who hears these recommendations and does not act on them will be like the foolish architect who designed his building on porous limestone. When acidic rain fell and infiltrated the soil, corrosive groundwater flowed and enlarged those pores to caverns. And the stormwater also flooded that building until it dropped into a sinkhole. And great was the lawsuit. Now, when Jesus had finished saying these things, the crowds were astonished at his expertise, for he had taught them as one having professional credentials and not as a scribe without a license to practice.
So I invite you to take a minute to share with your neighbor what might be shifting or solid ground in your life or in your communities or in our community's life right now.
The parable of the mustard seed. Jesus put before them a parable. The kingdom of heaven is like a mustard seed that someone took and sowed in the field. It is the smallest of all the seeds, but when it has grown, it is the greatest of shrubs and becomes a tree so that the birds of the air can come and make nests in its branches.
I've often heard this parable described as being about how the kingdom of God starts out small, but then gets big over time. And the mustard seed I've often heard described as an obnoxious weed, like kudzu or dandelions, that inevitably will take over. But when we look at what the words that Matthew actually chose, we see more of a language of cultivation. Somebody was planting this mustard seed. And it doesn't call mustard a weed. There's a Greek word for that. It calls it a vegetable that grows into a tree. Now, when we start to think about mustard as a cultivated plant rather than a weed, we're invited to think about why someone might care for it. Because mustard is flavorful. We use it in our kitchens, as we see up here. But it's also healing. It's also a little bit of an exaggeration on Jesus' part to call a mustard shrub a tree. As anyone who has seen mustard growing, it usually doesn't get much taller than I am. When Jesus uses this image of a tree, he's exaggerating quite a bit. And that's pretty common in parables to use exaggeration. Some people throughout history have said maybe this is how our resurrected bodies, our bodies in this new kingdom, are different than our regular bodies we have right now. And some have seen in this parable a critique of empire. In Ezekiel 31 and Daniel 4, birds nest in trees that represent empires that later fall down. So it could be kind of a parody of empire to say that this ubiquitous mustard shrub is the tree of heaven, to say that the kingdom of heaven is not in expensive luxuries, but in ordinary kitchens and medicine cabinets. So I invite you to check in with your neighbor and talk about how the kingdom of heaven could be flavorful, or how it could be healing, and how do we cultivate it rather than just assuming it'll inevitably take over.
He told them another parable. The kingdom of heaven is like yeast that a woman took and mixed in with 3 measures of flour until all of it was leavened.
Until I was preparing the sermon, I had forgotten that it was not until the time of Louis Pasteur in the 1800s that we have what I think of as yeast, the powder I buy at the store when I want to make challah bread or cinnamon rolls. The substance that people would have used in Jesus' time would have been a homemade sourdough starter, like we see in this container up front. Presumably a new one started shortly after Passover. You see, yeast fungi are in the air. And you begin a starter by mixing a little flour and a little water and letting it sit so that the yeast fungi are attracted to it. You add a little bit of flour every day, and the yeast just gathers there. After about 7 days, the mixture will have picked up enough yeast fungi from the air that when you hide the starter in the flour, it will not only add flavor, but it will also help it to rise. Each starter has its own particular culture of yeast fungi, and you can special order heirloom freeze-dried starters that will each taste and act a little bit different. And amazingly enough, scientists discovered just this year that the practice of sourdough baking can impact the kinds of bacteria that you have on your hands. And as Karen, our resident microbiome expert, can tell us, that can have all kinds of implications for your health. So when Jesus talks about avoiding the yeast of the Pharisees, he's talking about an individual culture that grew in a specific place at the hands of a specific people. Because some Jews clear yeast from their homes during Passover, some Christians have thought that this parable was about how Jesus is on team pro-yeast against other Jews who are anti-yeast. But leavened bread was not only a part of the daily life, but also a part of the daily temple offerings for all the year except for Passover. It reminds me a little bit of how Catholics celebrate Mass every day of the year but Good Friday, and how the absence on that one day just emphasizes how important it is for their tradition. When Jesus' original audience heard this story, they would have also thought about God's good gift of manna in the wilderness. And careful listeners would have noticed the phrase 3 measures of flour. I'd always thought that meant 3 scoops, but in fact that's a very specific measurement that means about 50 pounds of flour. Just as it's rather extravagant to call a mustard shrub a tree, it's rather extravagant to think of a woman being able to mix that much flour all on her own. That's about 10 of those bags right there. But it is also the exact same amount of flour that Sarah used to bake for her 3 heavenly guests who announced the birth of her son Isaac. And it's also the same amount that Hannah used when she brought a gift to the temple at the dedication of her son Samuel, who became a prophet. This is not only an inordinate amount of flour, it's also an amount that heralds an unexpected birth and a promise fulfilled. As we continue to consider the woman in this parable, I would ask us to give her the same honor that we give the men in other parables. If Jesus could be like the shepherd who leaves the 99 sheep to look for the lost sheep, or the man who runs to welcome the prodigal home, or the sower of seeds, could not Jesus also be like this woman who hid the starter within flour and therefore transforming it and bringing it a little bit closer to becoming enough bread for a feast for holy guests, a feast in which there's enough for everyone? So I'm going to ask you to turn to your neighbor and ask about what kind of culture are you being asked to seek or to avoid? or to what extravagance might you be called right now?
This is the parable of the pearl. Again, the kingdom of heaven is like a merchant in search of fine pearls. On finding one pearl of great value, he went and sold all that he had and bought it.
The way that I've heard this parable interpreted, I'm the pearl that Jesus gave up everything to buy. Or maybe I'm called to give up everything for that pearl, and that pearl represents Jesus or discipleship or the church or something like that. I'd never thought about how that would seem to reduce the kingdom of heaven into something that could be bought and sold. Nor had I thought about how that turns salvation into a me and Jesus relationship rather than something we all participate in together. This is one of those parables I definitely used to approach assuming I knew what it meant rather than asking it to read my life. I'd love to believe that I'm willing to give up everything for God, but perhaps the better question is, what am I already giving up everything for? The merchant was transformed. Once he found his pearl, he lost his identity as one who buys and sells things to become the owner of the great pearl. We tend to assume that's a good thing because merchants have a particularly bad rap in both the Old and the New Testaments, but we have to admit that his behavior is not rational and in fact borders on the absurd. Perhaps in this parable there's an invitation to transformation or to recognize how we've already been transformed. Perhaps there's an invitation to examine my own priorities and desires as I'm living them out. Dr. Levine is a seminary professor who regularly teaches a course on Matthew in a prison. Half of her students are incarcerated, and half of them pay tuition to Vanderbilt Divinity School. When she asked them what they imagined their pearls might be, what they would give up anything for, she was surprised at the diversity of their answers. One female student at Vanderbilt shared that her pastor husband had divorced her when she decided to pursue her own call to theological education. One of the incarcerated students said freedom. Another one said safety. One of the Vanderbilt students was a recovering alcoholic, so she was intrigued by the fact that the Greek word for pearl is margarita. She had once given up everything for alcohol, and then she'd given up that whole part of her life to pursue something different. I was reminded of her when I realized I had a very silly pearl during the month of January this year. My sister introduced me, my mom's laughing at me, she knows exactly what I'm talking about. My sister introduced me to a game on my phone in which you create an imaginary town, and you feed imaginary cows, and you sell goods to imaginary people. Nothing bad ever happens, your to-do list is very clear, and you meet needs with nothing more than the swipe of a finger. So as a social worker who works with kids and caregivers experiencing homelessness and needs I can't meet, a world in which bad things do happen, and a to-do list where urgency competes with urgency, this game absorbed my mind and my time for a solid 2 weeks. I normally have to fight to get out of bed in the morning to wake up, but my brain was waking me up at 4 a.m. to feed these imaginary cows. I realized that this silly pearl of an escapist game was really pointing to my pearl of a desire to be helpful and to meet any needs I could, even if they were imaginary characters on my phone. I realized that my priorities were mixed up, and for those 2 weeks at least, I wasn't taking good care of myself or paying attention to God. As I recognized this and laughed at myself, I felt God laughing at me, or with me, in the most gentle and loving way. So if this parable is about prioritization and transformation, it's definitely still one I'm learning to live into. When I deleted that game, that didn't mean that journey was over. But finding, reading this parable as being about priorities, it keeps challenging me. And I think when we're challenged by parables, that creates space for God to work on us. And so if I walk away from the scripture better equipped to love neighbor and myself and God, then that's a sign I should keep leaning into that kind of reading. So I'm going to ask you to share with your neighbor, what might be a pearl in your life today? Or how have you been transformed? Or how are you being called to be transformed?